to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Just my member of the board. Oh, we should have Mr. Brandon Kernan calling in this morning for a rare Monday because we want to talk a little bit about the article in the Sun-Times yesterday about the Marist thing with the my alma mater, but the brother now they're accusing of all kinds of nasty stuff in the 70s, and since I know nothing about him, or he was not there when I was there or anything, I just wanted to once in a while, I like to talk about what the law is and how it is applied in some of these cases. And those of you who are listening on Thursday accused Lou of, heard Lou accuse me of, Chief, you keep looking for this justice that is just not there. When are you going to stop? Like, I don't know if I'm ever going to stop. I think that's, I know perfection is hard to find, but you're never going to get it if you don't try. So, Brendan, how are you? Anyway, S&P futures are they're up 350. NASDAQ futures down 39 after being up again on Friday. Actually, up pretty much. So we've got. I never dreamed as I watched Saturday Night Live as a Ute with Belushi and those guys on there. And even though I was always involved in,
is Brendan there now?
Brendan, is he there now?
I'm going to try to get
there.
Are you there?
Yes, he is.
We got you now.
So, Brendan, when you were a Ute, I mean, even you were a Ute at one point. It's hard to imagine.
I was at one point.
Yes. So, say you're watching Saturday Night Live in the 70s. Were you trading, what were they trading, Stupid Coin last night or something? What's the one there?
Weren't they still trading baseball cards at that point?
Something. I mean, you were trading beers or something. I don't know what what's the one that Elon Musk is pushing?
Dogecoin.
Dogecoin was down 30% during the show or something. So these idiots are trading this thing during the show? It's Saturday night at midnight?
What could possibly be wrong with that?
Maybe tulips were 24 hours too. I don't know. You know, it's just, I mean, something's going on here, but it isn't exactly clear, as the song says.
Unfortunately, I missed Saturday Night Live this week,
you didn't miss much.
I did hear about that.
Yeah, you didn't miss much. I don't know. Well, my let's just say right-leaning significant other refuses to watch it. So that's a problem. But anywho, they are a little off the rails a little bit on some of the stuff. What's with the, I was listening to this one skit. What's with the Icelandic girl? Where did that come from? I don't know what that's all about. Anyway, I would turn on, like, I never saw this one before. But anyway, before we get in on one of our topics here this morning, I was of course, slammed by a bunch of Marist guys sending me stuff at 6 in the morning on Monday about the Sun-Times article about the brother at Marist is accused of issues with kids, high school boys. And I just am curious, not so much, I have no idea whether or not these people are guilty or not. I don't know if anybody is, but there's some stuff there that I just, from the legal standpoint, because, of course, the person who wrote the article kept weaving back and forth all these accusations as if they were already true. Of course, the guy died 4 years ago, so how the hell, anyway, before that, what about our weekend in sports? I am really sorry if the Bulls do not make the playoffs, because in the last 3 weeks, Matty, is it just me, or do they look like a real team?
Well, I do think that, it took them a while to kind of figure it out, and then you had injury issues with Vucevic for a while, and then you had Zach LaVine with the COVID situation, so he missed 11 games, and so they can never really click, but they kind of have all their guys back right now, and you have two All-Stars on the team, and that should be more than enough to be a playoff team. So I think if they were able to sneak in, which it doesn't look like they're going to be able to, but if they were, they'd be a scary out early in the playoffs.
Who's
really interesting to see what Billy Donovan has done so far. I mean, it's been up and down trying to get everybody to buy in, but it looks like he may have some talent to work with now.
Well, some of the guys that are playing appreciably better, a white kid is playing better. The draft pick 2 years ago. Kobe White.
Yeah.
Kobe White.
He is.
I didn't mean white as in Caucasian. I meant white as in his name.
Yeah, Kobe White is playing better.
Yeah, we're not talking about the Celtics here.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is playing better, certainly. And you know, he's 20, so there was going to be a learning curve there. Still not, in my opinion, a starting point guard in the NBA on a winning team. He's more of a score first kind of guy that you'd like to have come off the bench and can give you 20 points on a given night. Because he turns the ball over too much and doesn't really get others involved.
Less lately.
But less lately, yeah. And I really like the kid. He seems like a really good kid. He plays his butt off.
Yeah.
No question about that. Takes hits and gets up every time. But he is playing better, I would agree.
But the center and Zach seem to have gotten themselves they don't mind sharing the basketball a bit, which is decent. It took a while for that to happen. Because that center is really a real ball player.
Oh yeah, he's great, and he'll pass if you're open. If you cut, he'll hit you, and he's great in the post. He can step out and hit a three. He's a really great rebounder. He's a great player. The reason why he's a 2-time All Star.
Well, this guy Tice and Thaddeus Young are real problems for somebody's bench group. It seems to me
both veteran guys, yeah. Both guys that kind of do the same type of thing where they. Are hustle guys. They can step out and hit a jump shot if you need them to, but they're more kind of dirty work guys.
Yeah, I don't know if you were. Might have been Thursday, and I don't think you were here where Stacey King was talking about Theis kept. Well, you were here because it was that ball kid. They kept mowing over the kid again. The boys' department is downstairs. This is the men's department. Anyway, Brendan, we'll talk about the market here in a bit because we got Mike on later and stuff. But my issue with a lot of this stuff that's going on, the accusations, you know, pretty much all over the place. As we run into this, we don't need no stinking Justice Department. We've got the Court of Public Opinion.
Mm-hmm.
How exactly? I mean, I'm not at all willing to say, boy, some of this stuff didn't happen with brothers and priests and other people, because obviously it must have. I mean, there's got to be smoke where there's fire, right? Or fire where there's smoke, or whatever that's supposed to be. But I'm just kind of curious as to how this walks from, we're talking about 1970 something.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden the guy dies in 17, and now all of a sudden people are coming out of the woodwork. Or a few people are. And it's one of these things that I'm going to tell a quick story here, but, when PTI first started way back in the 90s, we had a client from Texas, and he was one of those bigger-than-thou guys, and he had a bunch of people that gave him money, and he ran a hedge fund. And all the paperwork that we got, everything was such that they had, you know, literally millions of dollars. And he thought the market was too high, so he was looking for some people who knew how to execute options. In those days, we didn't really manage money. We just executed stuff. So, you know, better than anybody, because our people could call the trading floor in those days. You could actually call down to a broker. And we were the only firm that could do that. I mean, you weren't gonna let 10,000 people at Merrill Lynch call the trading floor, but our guys had all been on the floor, knew everybody, so we had no problem. Anyway, it's not a PTI commercial from the 90s. It was a long time ago. So this guy came with us to do his hedging. And every once in a while, he'd buy a bunch of puts, and the market would go flying up, and he'd basically get his butt kicked on the puts. And we were always saying, hey, you know, what's going on? You're losing, like, too much dough. And the guy goes, look, I literally have millions of dollars, and he sent us proof at another firm. He goes, you guys are just, all I use you guys for, you're like the pimple on the ass of an elephant, basically. And I just do a little bit of hedging for you guys. And the days I lose 100 grand for you guys, I'm making $3 million somewhere else. So basically don't bug me, you know, kind of a thing. And we checked everything out. And, well, all of a sudden, it turns out the guy was kind of a scam, right? And these people sue him, and the guy goes to jail. Now, this has nothing to do with us, right? But, of course, he doesn't have any money, so we get arbitrated against. Well, we win the arbitration handily because we didn't do anything wrong. So all of a sudden, it goes to state court in Texas, which it never should have been. But, of course, guess what the county was? Harris County, right? The same people that They lost all the money trading weird stuff for all the bigger firms. So all these people, Brennan, there's like 20 people, all had the same affidavit that the only reason why they gave this guy any money whatsoever was because of us. And they never even met. They never even met us. We're talking about a bunch of old people. Everybody says, you know, old people are honest. Not so. So every one of them, so me being the kind of guy that I am, I go through all the paperwork on when they had signed up with this guy versus when he signed up with us. They had given this guy their money 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 years before the guy even met us.
Mm-hmm.
So we call, I called my attorney up and I said, look, here's what we're doing. You're going to call the other guy. You know, attorneys, you know, I'm sorry about this, are sometimes are big weenies when it comes to doing stuff like this. I said, you're going to tell him that if they don't drop this case, next week every single person is going to get a lawsuit from us regarding lying on an affidavit. Because I can never do that. I said, if you don't do it, I'm hiring somebody else. But sure enough, he calls the guy, and a week later it's dropped. Every single one of those guys, every one, Brendan, did nothing but lie. So this idea that people, especially if they're older, don't lie when there's money at stake, I just can't buy. Because I've seen it right in front of my very eyes. Now I can't divorce the heinous things that this brother at Marist was accused of to somehow a payday down the road. I can't do it. I mean, I hope that they're all falsehoods, but if they're not, whenever you put money into something, all of a sudden the truth seems to be a little wobbly. Or is it just me?
Well, there's certainly a lot of issues here with the allegations against his brother. First, as you said, he died 4 years ago. So that's always a problem when allegations like this come up against people who have died as to why. But, you know, we're in a different world right now than we were back in the 70s and the 80s and the 60s when a lot of these allegations came up. So I take your point that older people may lie and memories will be faulty after this period of time. But the other thing that is true in this kind of an allegation, and I say this type of an allegation, of teachers, especially religious teachers and priests, molesting children for many years ago, is that there's now a platform where they can talk. They can come out now and talk about it, similar to when I was Father Flager, similar to what's going on with the guy from Christ the King Parish out in the South Side. It recently came out about him. They're still alive, so they can defend themselves, but it's still very hard to go back against the memory from people who happened years ago. However, there has been some studies done that shows that traumatic memories can either be enhanced or modified after years of stress. So, I mean, it's a really weird issue. And I do agree that there could be a monetary issue here that so many kids are coming up now from, you know, in that article, we talked about several kids from Marist. But the article in the Sun-Times on Sunday was also very odd. I had a hard time piecing together the chronology and whether there was anybody at Marist High School in Chicago.
That's because there was no chronology to mention that.
Allegations. Yeah. There was one mention of that at the beginning, but then most of the article was talking about what happened in other places like the camp, the Marist camp, and two other schools, one in Oregon and one in New York. But it was a really confusing article the way that it was written.
Well, I can't imagine anybody taking advantage of anybody like that. I just, you know, my skin crawls. But the thing I can't piece together, Brendan, is A, the part about people dying, and you're waiting 40 years, and now you can't, the guy can't even defend himself. But I can't follow the money chain. I remember a story, you know, the movie with the Summer of 42. I mean, let's say, for instance, that I went on vacation with my parents, and they were avid golfers, and they'd go out golfing every day, and there was a lady there who was older than me, and I was 16, and she took a liking to me, and things happened, right? And all of a sudden, 40 years later, now I feel that I was abused, and I, you know, obviously the law says I was. By the way, this never happened. And all of a sudden I decide, well, this is not right. I'm gonna write this wrong. Well, okay. The thing I don't understand is, I can come out and say, look, this is what this lady did, and maybe she did it to a bunch of other young boys on other vacations. Who the hell knows? Possibly. But how do I get from her to, suppose she works for AT&T, to where I get to sue AT&T for money, or if she's dead, I get to get money out of her family or her sister or her grandfather or where she worked at the time or the place we stayed. How does it become more, just because somebody is in the Marist Brothers, how all of a sudden, or the Archdiocese of Chicago, how is half my $10 I throw in the church next week going to somebody from something 50 years ago? Man, I don't get the money connection.
There's a big difference there. A big difference. And that is that in the case of the story on Sunday with the brothers or priests that have been alleged to have abused kids, are in a position of power, first of all.
I understand.
They're in a position of superiority where they have access to children by virtue of the church or the brotherhood at Marist, for example. Putting them in that position. The second thing that's really important here is that where the money really comes into play when people are sued, it's not just for that one kid who was abused necessarily, but the money really exponentially explodes if the brotherhood or if the archdiocese or if the cardinal knew that that priest or that brother had been credible charges against him and continued to put him in positions where he could molest again. And that's the charge that are looked at in this case with the guy from Marist, the brother from Marist, and many of the other priests. But if the archdiocese knows that so-and-so molested or allegedly molested somebody, and it's a credible charge, and yet they moved him from parish A to parish B, or high school A to high school B, and didn't tell anybody, didn't tell the cops, didn't tell the parents, didn't tell anybody else who's around him about these credible allegations, they're allowing that person to molest again and giving them the ability to do that in the setting of where they're putting him. So there's a big difference between that and your Anne Bancroft example of being on vacation in the Hamptons like they did, or like wherever it was in the Graduate.
Yeah, he was over 18.
Okay.
I'm just saying. What a great shot between her legs, huh? It was a...
Yeah.
I understand where you're coming from, and I think you're right. But just when the part that I've always had, I can't find where the line is. I guess what I'm saying is, if I find out that somebody, for instance, is molesting my kid, which, you know, I really don't think that I would go, if I thought it was the parish priest, I really don't think I would tell a nun and then 20 years later sue the nun's order for her not telling the police. Wasn't that my job?
That's not the scenario in most cases. The scenario is that the archdiocese knew about it or the brotherhood knew about it, and they didn't take action. That's a much more difficult situation. Like in this case, if there was credible evidence that that this brother, when he was in Oregon, at Marist High School in Oregon, had molested kids, and instead of saying, we're going to send you for treatment or we're going to turn you into the cops, instead we're going to send you to Marist High School in Chicago.
Oh, I get that,
where
yeah.
You again have access to children of that age and allow that to happen and don't tell anybody.
But how would the parents ever think that that's good enough? How does a parent say that's okay? Isn't it the parent's job, if he knows this is happening, to call the cops? Not another priest?
Sometimes they don't know.
Okay, they don't know. I get it. Okay. I'm not arguing. I'm just trying to find out where sort of the line is here, because it always seems like the people
that
are...
The line keeps moving. It's a line in the sand with the waves coming up on the shore. It keeps on moving. And every time you draw the line, it gets a little bit murkier, and another wave comes in and washes away.
But at the end of the day, the people paying the money are people that had nothing to do with it. Which is a problem.
I agree with that. But the other thing is that many times the courts are punitive towards an organization because of the systemic process that they've got to deny that that's happening. And it's particularly true with something like the Catholic Church and how widespread the abuses have been since the Boston scandal came out.
Oh, yeah.
They noticed how widespread it was.
I get it. And I can't. The weird part is, Brendan, I never saw any of that. You know, I mean, I'll say this. I mean, you went to St. You went to Rice, right? You went to Leo Grammar School?
Leo Grammar School, Brother Rice High School.
Can you think of a more homophobic place than the South Side in the late 60s?
No, I can't.
I mean, the idea of somebody even attempting to do any of this stuff and a student at Marist High School not knowing about it through the grapevine, I can't, unless they picked. How do they pick just they must know. How do you pick just the right kid that'll never talk? I mean, it just seems really bizarre to me.
I do know that there were, and you may know this too, but there are kids that I went to high school with that wound up being gay. I mean, I found out years later that they were gay. I mean, one example, Tom Tunney, the alderman from Chicago, he's a Brother Rice grad.
Okay.
And there's other people, but, you know.
Well, I'm sure there were guys at Marist, too.
A lot in high school because of his nature, his mannerisms. But yet, he made it through. I think that, and from what I've read, you know, when you've got these serial molesters, they know how to pick them and groom them, and if it's not following the path that they want, they'll find somebody else. But they do have a way of picking kids. They identify them. They just somehow know how to identify the kids and groom them until it's the time is right.
Well, but some of the people were at Marist at the time. Well, but some of the people at Marist, the risk of picking the wrong kid and have it get out, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think a lot of times in these cases, whether it's the brothers at a high school or the priests in a parish, or like Boy Scout, troop masters, troop leaders, there's so many kids around that they can kind of start moving in on a whole bunch of kids, and if they see that it's not working or that it's too dangerous, then they'll pick somebody else or go further with somebody else. I think it's, you know, from what I've read in some of these studies, that there's a whole bunch of kids that they're kind of grooming along the way, and sometimes they go further and sometimes they don't. And that's the other insidious thing about this is you will have parents from, we'll just take the example of some of the kids at Marist who are now raising this. There'll be other kids who said, well, I know that brother did a lot of good for my son Johnny because he took him here and took him there and nothing like that ever happened. So it even muddies the waters even further if he's doing really good things and acting as a surrogate father for a kid who's had father issues and doesn't take any action towards molestation, then how can you believe that he's doing it for Jimmy instead of Johnny?
Yeah, I wish none of it obviously ever happened, but it's really kind of strange that in our lifetime, you went from a situation, clearly when we were in high school, that, you know, to say that people were homophobic is, you know, God, talk about an understatement, eh?
And then
all of a sudden, you know, you go to Notre Dame, and I heard stories after, but I never saw anything there. The only guy I knew that was a little out there, shall we say, was Fat Eddie who ran the rock. They loved it when everybody ran around naked for swimming. But he was harmless. I mean, nobody paid attention to him. And now years later, you're like, okay, 10% of the people in Notre Dame were gay. What's the difference?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you went from being amazingly homophobic and everybody was, quote, abused. Obviously, if you're underage, you are being abused. And all of a sudden then, well, they were just keeping it quiet because that's just the way they were. And now it's totally accepted. So, I mean, there's been a progression here. And then when you throw a bunch of money on top of it, like everything else, money can corrupt. It just seems to me. I mean,
Good point, and I agree with you that when you look at how homophobic, like you said, on the South Side growing up, and you think about even some of the terms that we use now that's in everyday parlance. I mean, I knew that the world had changed when my mother, of all people, said the Cubs suck.
Yeah.
Because the term suck was used in a very specific way when we were in high school.
Oh, yeah.
To have a homophobic meaning. And now it's in use by every day. Politicians will say it on the.
Now you're a bad baseball player, as opposed to what it really meant.
Yeah, exactly. But you know that, and you look at the approval of an acceptance of gay marriage or gay rights in many cases. It kind of flipped the switch, and the reason it flipped the switch is that I think Americans realize that their next door neighbor or their grocer or you know whoever is in their lives, a family member. Is gay. People were starting to disclose that their sexual orientation was that they were gay. And all of a sudden, when you realize that it's not such a painful process or it's not such a horrific process, that maybe it's acceptable, more acceptable, to allow things like gay marriage.
Well, and
that flip switched very quickly, like from even the time that Obama went into the White House until the Supreme Court made the decision that gay marriage was okay. It was just a matter of a few years. And America just kind of really quickly flipped on that point so quickly.
Well, it just seems like that article about merits, it seemed, well, one of my buddies was on me yesterday about how, you know, he's a big donor to the school and he loves the place and blah, blah, blah. I just went there and, you know, I go to a golf outing once in a while and that's about it. I mean, just the idea that the article was too soon, too fast, and like you say, a little too hit or miss on any of the facts and no chronology. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine some guy doing some weird stuff in 1975, knowing who I know is the principal and the dean of discipline, and we talk about the most, God, well, arch-conservative dudes on earth. You'd have to been, you know, whatever. I'm just saying it was an odd world. But
it
Brad,
was an odd world. But, you know, one of the years that he was at Marist overlapped when you were there in 68, 69.
Really? I thought he was 70s.
He came back in the 70s. Ah. He was at Marist on three different stints. That was one of the other Marist in Chicago on three different stints. He was there in 68, 69. He came back in, I think, 72 to 74, and then came back again, like, 76 or 78
oh,
or
right.
something like that.
So I didn't know.
Three different periods where he was at Marist High School in Chicago.
Because I sort of remember the name, but then I never had him for class or anything like that, so... Anywho, Brennan, thank you very much. Talk at you tomorrow. SP Feeders up 2, NASA Feeders down 55. Come back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, and that's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right now. Hello, welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber, the board member, Mr. John Flanagan, with us. Matty, just when you thought the world can't get any crazier, is you and I read the news every day, and sometimes we're crazed by it. When we get done with this, we got to talk about this Chinese rocket that landed in the Indian Ocean and the outrage about this thing. It's scary. S&P futures up 2. Not that I want it to land on our head, by the way. Especially when you guys are playing softball, that would be bad. NASDAQ futures down 61. Dow futures up 106. Individual stocks in the Dow that are moving. We got Home Depot up 75 cents. Imagine that. Caterpillar up 95 cents. Not really that much. So it doesn't take much to run us up 108 points. A couple guys aren't open yet. The American Express and 3M. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 25 points, 0.1%. FTSE up 2. Call that flat. Kekron down 14.2%. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei up 160.5%. Shanghai up 9.3%. Hang Seng down 15. Let's call that one flat. On Friday, we had a Dow up 229. The S&P up 30. NASDAQ up 119. It was a pretty strong week last week. Bonds, 10-year, 1.58. It's been in the 1.6s for a while, so it's down a little bit. The Fed keeps buying away. The Bund, minus 0.20. As again, they keep trying to inch towards zero. We'll see if they make it. Japan up 0.09, up from 0.08 last week. And UK's positive 0.80. Oil up another 60 cents, 65.50. Brent up 71, 68.99. If you haven't noticed, gas is pretty darn high. Natural gas down 2 cents, 2.93. Our Bob is 2.16. That's up 3 cents. And I paid, 3.23. So that spread is now $1.07. And I'm going to save a lot of times that spread is like 70 cents. So we have the, I'm going to ask Mr. Matty Weber about the Colonial Pipeline and ransomware after we're done here. So hope he's ready to answer all these questions. He's our technical genius. We got gold up 670, 1838. Silver up 31 cents, 2779. Copper up 12 cents, 487. So the metals continue to go. So if you're in any commodities, you're making money here, provided you're long, of course. Palladium up 59, 2984. And last but not least, a crypto Bitcoin up 702 to 58,061. And, Elon Musk dropped the 130% while he was talking, and it rallied back by the end of Saturday Night Live, only being down 17%. I never would dream that people were trading that thing. Shows you what I know. Maddie, we got first traffic, weather, sports.
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a crash on the outbound Stevenson I-55 in Bolingbrook. That's right at Illinois 53, that crash on the outbound side of I-55. So keep that in mind. That's our only issue on any of the expressways right now. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower, traffic starting to build as you approach the circle, but no issues. Same for the inbound Stevenson. Southside expressways, I-57, Bishop Ford, and the Ryan are all quiet. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Off the expressways, there's a crash in Joliet, Jefferson Street, between Manor Court and Hunter Avenue. And then just northwest of there, there was a crash on my screen that just went away. So apparently that's been all clear. Everything else is all quiet out there. Weather today, another just miserable weather day, but we're used to that. Partly cloudy early, then more rain, more cold, highs in the upper 40s. And it'll feel even colder than that with the wind chills. Even though we're approaching mid-May right now here on May 10th, it's a lot of March-type weather that we've been dealing with, and no sign of it warming up anytime soon. Right now it is partly cloudy and 45, going up to a rainy high of 48. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 96. Right now it's clear and 67. In sports, the White Sox are playing good ball. They swept the Royals down in Kansas City, blowing them out yesterday 9-3. Cubs took 2 of 3 from the Pirates, but fell short in their sweep attempt, losing 6-5 yesterday. Cubs scored 3 runs in the bottom of the ninth, but came up 1 run short with the tying run at second. Diamondbacks lost to the Mets 4-2. So as we take our quick look at our Monday morning baseball standings, White Sox are in first place in the AL Central, having won 3 in a row and 7 out of 10. They're 19-13, 1 game up on Cleveland in the AL Central. Cubs are sitting at 500, 17-17. They've also won 7 out of 10. But after losing to the Pirates, they're now 3.5 back of first place St. Louis, and they are 1.5 back of second place Milwaukee. So the Cubs are in third place in the NL Central, but back at 500. Meanwhile, the Diamondbacks are 15-19. They've lost 6 in a row, really tail spinning. They're now in fourth place in the NL West. NBA basketball, Bulls had no problem beating the Pistons in Detroit, 108-96. Suns lost to the Lakers, 123-110. And in hockey, the Blackhawks welcomed fans back to the United Center last night, and they doubled up the Stars 4-2. Chief.
I watched the Bulls play. Was it Friday night? Whatever it was, when the first night the fans were back?
Yeah.
Explain to me, Lucy, where the hell were the fans? I didn't see anybody.
I think they were all in the upper deck.
Well, so what is the... What's other than people stopping for burgers and beers at Billy Goat's before the game, what good are we doing here? I mean, there wasn't anyone near a player.
I would have no interest in going to a game to sit in the upper deck. I mean,
no.
There's nothing wrong with sitting in the upper deck. I don't want to sound like I'm a, you know, snob or anything like
that. Well, the young Matt Weber actually had tickets up there.
I did for a while.
But now you've morphed past that.
But now I'd rather just watch the game at home unless I have, like, really good seats. You see what I'm saying?
Well, at least you're not as bad as Flanagan. He won't go unless he's in a skybox.
Well, I'm kind of with him on
Tom,
that.
No, I am you know, a little bit like that when it comes to opera. And you know, I've worked my way down from nosebleed territory over the years as I had a few more bucks to spend and got better seats. But if I have to go masked or have to sit 6 feet away from something or whatever, you can have it. You know, I'll find some other way to entertain myself.
God. Well, yeah, it's the. I still like my first row upper deck at Cubs Park, looking down the left field line. I like
those are damn good seats.
Yeah, those are the best seat I think I've ever had. And you know, there wasn't a skybox. I mean, obviously, it's the skybox at Wrigley. You fall out, you damn near fall on the field. But even though it was such a horrible stadium, Old Comiskey had a few spots that were just priceless.
Oh yeah,
if you sat in the upper deck behind home plate. I think if you fell out, you landed on the umpire's head. I mean,
yeah. The
overhang, you were almost at the field, man. It was so close. Now, the rest of the park, the seats were lousy, but wherever the upper deck was, if you were first row right behind for home plate, I'm going to say, Jan, you were 25 feet, 30 feet closer to the field than at Wrigley. And Wrigley, you're close. Am I right, you think?
Oh, yeah.
For some reason, the way the geometry swept around home plate, you were right there. I mean, it was and
that's one of the most dramatic things. I mean, to come up out of those tunnels, you know, when you'd be walking up, and you know, all you see maybe is sky when you're going up on the upper deck, and you don't have your bearings, you don't know where you are, and then all of a sudden you see where you're at and what's below you. That's one of the most striking things. I remember practically falling over, fainting from just how close you were to everything. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. The so Jan, we're kind of. Ragging today a little bit about the Maris story because not so much you know what happened or didn't happen. I mean, if it happened, it's awful. But the idea of waiting for somebody to die before you say something, you know, it's just me. But I was sitting here this weekend reading about, and everywhere you turned, all you heard about was this Chinese rocket coming down, and how these Chinese are the most useless people on earth, and why aren't they paying attention? I'm sitting there going, wait a minute. This has been going on forever, and nobody cares. I mean, so this morning I just look a little bit. I'm thinking, remember, talk about this, what happens when you're old. 40 years ago? 50 years ago, what was that big hunk of thing that came down? Was it the International Space Station that came down?
Oh, the part of the Mir, the Soviet station?
No, it was ours.
Yeah, well, it could have been, you know, I don't think it was part of the, it might have been
no,
one
no,
of
it was
the
a,
contraptions
it was a,
or pieces of it, yeah.
No, it was the precursor to the one they're using now. This is not the first one.
Well, I do remember there was, you know, all this doomster stuff about where will it fall and what will it do. And
well, it was like four times bigger than his rocket, or three times.
Right.
But get a load of this. According to NASA, an average of one catalog piece of debris has fallen back to Earth every day for the last 50 years. And we're on the Chinese, no pun intended, like white on rice about this thing. I mean, like, these are the worst guys on Earth. I mean, it's, I mean, what are we doing? I mean, we can't wait to, but do you think the people who wrote the article even spent the 30 seconds looking this stuff up like I did?
No, it's just propaganda, you know, warring propagandas, and forget what we did, or forget what somebody else did, or forget that it happens every day.
Well, I can remember that ours, when I say ours, Litter from Space, 1979, the 77-ton. This was the name of Skylab. Remember that thing?
Yeah.
Disintegrated over Western Australia, peppering the area around the southern coastal town with fragments. At the time, the event was met with excitement and a sense of lightheartedness, and many pieces were collected by space enthusiasts. And now all of a sudden, these guys come down in the middle of the ocean, and we're on these guys like they're the worst people on Earth. Now, granted, I guess you have a little more control over things these days, but this stuff drops all the time from all the crap that's up there. Now, would anybody have any idea of that by reading any of the articles this weekend?
Oh, no. Of course not. Any more than they would know anything about all of the graduates of Marist High School or any other non-public high school and what those people have done with their educations. You'd never see any magazine or newspaper crowing about that, you know. But they make a meal out of something like this thing on Sunday. So,
well, just 1 year before Skylab's demise, a Soviet remote sensing satellite, Cosmos 954, plummeted into a barren region of Canada's Northwest Territories, spreading radioactive debris over several hundred square... This thing was known as an atomic one, and the Canadians didn't even get pissed off. I mean, with the Cold War at its height, the sensitivity of the nuclear technology on board Cosmos 954 led to an unfortunate delay in locating and cleaning up the wreckage because of the distrust between the Soviet Union and the Canadian-U.S. recovery effort. The cleanup operation took months, but located only a portion of the debris. Canada billed the Soviet Union more than 6 million Canadian and spent millions more, was ultimately paid only 3 million, blah, blah, blah. If you read any of this stuff and you look at the articles this weekend, you'd have to say, who wrote this stuff? Without any shred of history or any... I remember Skylab was a big deal because that thing was...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, 77 tons is some number. It's a number. So the biggest and worst piece that landed on land was us, and yet we're giving the Chinese crap all weekend about this thing.
Selective outrage.
Yeah. So, anywho. So, Jan, we've got... was it the most miserable Mother's Day ever yesterday, or what?
It's hell to be a mother on a good day.
Yeah.
You take yesterday.
I usually go to the cemetery on Mother's Day. I had to push it off a week. I'm like, what am I doing?
Yeah, that was our family tradition too, and I didn't make it out there. It's hard to drag, you know, without a car, and even renting a car these days isn't that easy. But it used to be a ceremonial thing in the family to go out to Mount Olivet and Mount Carmel and decorate the graves. That's become really, you know, something of ancient history to most people now. But
very big in the Hispanic community.
Yeah,
they still visit the graves. What was I gonna ask you? You know, they made a big shot in the article about Marist about these high schools that are run by orders that the archdiocese doesn't control. It seems like the archdiocese might have been part of that article. They want to control all these places.
Well, a little damage control, you know,
yeah.
So the focus doesn't go on them. So, but you know, to me, it was. You know, I always dread opening up the Sunday Sun-Times or the Tribune because you know there is some meal that's been made out of something for the last several weeks. They're just itching to spread it out over 10 pages. And all the pictures in the article yesterday of these places connected with the supposed abuse, and, you know, they show it as if it's kind of like, you know, tourist literature. Here's this beautiful summer camp. Here's this aerial view of, you know, a Marist High School out east. And all this stuff, and you can tell they're just making great readers think, cha-ching, you know, here we go, look at all the money these people have and the outfits that they run. And you can't tell me there's not enough money there to support some of these, you know, claims of abuse. So the whole tilt of it is just off and designed to take advantage of somebody who's dead now. There's no way he can come back and defend himself. And statutes of limitations have a lot of wisdom behind them. After a while, it doesn't make sense to claim an outrage was committed when you weren't so outraged that you had to wait 50 years to say anything about it, and that there's no way to get good evidence or memories reconstructed or anything dependable. I mean, look at the whole, you know, Brett Kavanaugh mess.
How
that revolved around stuff that happened in high school, and now you really think this is kind of a credible case. I'm sorry, it just doesn't work for me at all.
Well, what when you go down that road somewhat, how many... When you read an article, I mean, especially in something you know nothing about, I mean, I just happen to be old enough to remember the Skylab coming down and everybody being afraid, what if it lands on New York? So I just had a feeling this was not the biggest piece ever, and the biggest piece happened to be us. And of course, you would think that if you write an article, you would mention that, but I've been privy to probably 10 articles ever, you know, in a whole lifetime, where I actually knew all the details. Some having to do with the, you know, CBOE, some having to do with a couple of murders, unfortunately. And the part about the Ceres Cafe with the police chief. And every single time I knew pretty much all the facts, which is very rare, the article was an absolute abortion and stuff that was in there. I mean, the kid I knew that blew his parents away across the street from where we used to live, every fact in there was wrong. I mean, how do you blow that one? The guy lived at home with his parents and blew him away with a shotgun. How do you screw up that article? I mean, it's just a total non-attention to detail. How could you possibly screw it up? It's the world's simplest article to write. Guy's at home. He went to Harvard. Went to Mendel High School. Went to Harvard. Blew his parents away. How do you screw that up? They had been wrong high school, wrong age. I mean,
well, you know, some of it is just sloppy journalism or lack of standards, but a lot of it, I think, is selective omission, and it's designed, I think, to reconstruct memories that are ancient history for most people anyway, in such a fashion that it changes history, and nobody's ever going to go back and recheck it. And you can see this with the way, you know, docudramas are done or biopics. They become the official history, and they are so distorted, they're laughable, but they will become the account that everybody knows, and there'll be absolutely no need for fact-checking it, so that the legend just grows, and it grows in a distorted, often completely wrong way, and it's, you can't do anything about it.
Well, when Pullman was taken over, there were articles, you know, all over the place, because that was one of, well, at the time, Pullman was the oldest company on the New York Stock Exchange. You know, go figure, making railroad cars since the 1860s, or 70s, somewhere in there. And
before 60s, because Lincoln, that was what put Pullman on the map. The Lincoln funeral cortege needed something special, and they got it from Pullman, and that became their biggest advertising tool.
Yeah, well, they, well, I mean, it's this. Here's a talk about a piece of trivia. If you were to be in Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which they don't have anymore, if they were to ask you, who was the largest hotel in the 50s, the answer would be Pullman. Because, what, 40,000 people or 25,000 people spent the night on the rails every night? Pullman.
Oh, right, right.
Anyway, so when Pullman got taken over by Wheeler, Brader, Fry, all the articles talked about was what a great buy it was, and this business was great, and that business was great. Now, not one article, even in the Wall Street Journal, and, you know, they're pretty senior guys writing these things, not one of them mentioned that the entire takeover had to do with a hole in the ERISA laws that allowed a company coming in from the outside to raid the pension fund if it was overfunded and the company that owned it, like Pullman, couldn't take the excess money out. And that was like the only reason. You could read 15 articles about it, and not one person had a clue that that was the reason for the merger.
And you got to believe that was deliberate. I mean,
yeah.
Well, with Sam Zell in the Tribune, I mean, that was a pattern too.
How does Sam Zell not have to have a key to get out of his room?
Like, why they had to bury George Pullman under 15 feet of concrete?
I mean, Sam Zell.
So many people are going to come back and dig him up.
How could what he did to the Tribune even be remotely considered legal or moral?
Unbelievable, Tom. It really is.
I'm not talking about, you know, whether it was criminal, but boy, oh boy, how did I just? I, you know, it's crazy stuff. I don't. So are you? Are you signing up to be in a firing squad in South Carolina?
Sign me up.
So, man, to get a load of this, the weather was so awful. I actually dug in to how somebody goes about being on a firing squad, and they take people.
Aren't they all police?
Yeah, they're police. But it's one guy's job to give everybody. And there's five people, right? And there's one guy's job to hand out the guns in such a way where one person has a blank, right? So everybody can say in their conscience.
Well, I don't know if it was me or not. Yeah,
I don't know if it was me or not. So, and you have to go take shooting classes, because obviously you don't want to miss or nail the guy in like the foot or something. That wouldn't be good. So I'm sitting there going, why would anybody? I just. You would think that these are like
stories. Do they aim for the head or the chest or what?
I think
they
you go mid. I think you go mid. I think, John. What do you think? You're supposed to go mid body.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't ever see. Even see people at the range, which of course everybody around me now is all they do is talk about going to the range. I've had many. You know, they're around you too, though. So maybe it's you, the people that you hang around with now are all. How many of your pals are going as concealed carry classes?
I don't know anyone.
I don't think they'll tell me.
They might not just tell you, Maddie.
That could be.
But why, they're all telling me. They're telling me that now the big thing is you can't buy ammunition. So everybody's outraged because the ammunition's in short supply. Talk about America. I mean, was ammunition made in China, or how could it be in short supply? Anyway, bizarro world. So, all right, John, we got to talk about the markets a little bit, and your thing. I was talking about you all week after you were off. Where is the status, do you think, of all? I don't see how we're going to end up with all these people being evicted, like next month. I mean, there's got to be. Everybody's had, what, 6 months now? Has it been 6 months or nine? We're supposed to be handing, if you haven't paid anything, you're supposed to be handing your lessor a 6 month check. And most people have, what, 1 or 2 months maybe of deposit. So, I don't see how you, if the numbers are 100,000 people, how are you going to evict everybody? How many sheriff's deputies do we have, for God's sake?
And just, you know, conducting the proceedings, you know, remotely or on Zoom, because the circuit courts certainly haven't reopened completely. This will drag out all summer long, all winter long, very likely, I think. And it will be about money, or how much was really paid, or how much is owing, and whether that's, you know, a sufficient amount to toll the statute, or to let you stay, or to let you have emergency relief because you showed good faith and trying to come up with something. It's going to drag out every. So it may not be an explosion in, say, a week or so, but there will be a trickle of this, I think, and it will likely snowball at the end, where there's going to be a lot of people who aren't going to have any rental space to call their own anymore. So they'll be out, and depending on what else happens in the economy.
Well, does anybody else have this? Say, for instance, you and I and Maddie, we own a 12 flat, and we have some equity in there, and we have, you know, a mortgage loan, and we thought we were fine, and all of a sudden now, well, I don't think you get all 12 people not paying, I sure hope not, but say half of people don't pay, or, and, you know, it's somewhere along the line here, we're not going to be able to pay the gas bill. I mean, hopefully we can, even if half the people pay, if we have enough equity and so forth, and our mortgage is, well, if the mortgage is a quarter of what we take in, we should still be able to maintain some stuff, right? But there's got to be people who can't afford the gas bill or electric bill, because they're sure in hell not cutting back. Is there any sort of a moratorium on any of that stuff, or no? There's clearly not a moratorium on your taxes, are there?
No. I mean, the gas company has all sorts of programs to help you out, but, you know, when it comes to, like, an institutional landlord who's not paying the gas bill for whatever reason, I don't think the gas company has a lot of sympathy for those.
Right, so
there'll be a lot of, I think, dilapidated buildings and, you know, fires and demolitions before we're through, because a lot of these landlords are going to go belly up too. They're not going to be able to do minimal maintenance. They're not going to be able to you know, come and inspect. They're not going to care what's happening. They'll probably just walk if it becomes something impossible to hold on to it.
Well, I mean,
then you got banks hanging on to it, and it'll be a repeat of 2008 to some extent, but worse, because it will be bigger properties.
Yeah, see, we'll have to break. Let's talk about it, because I think that the hole that's been put, the COVID hole that we've dug, might be a little bigger than we're thinking. And even though we're going to get a snapback rally in some areas, I don't know that it's bigger than the hole. You know, we'll hope it is. S&P futures up 2.25, and NASDAQ futures down 67. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, Audrey Johnson, at Realtor.com. That's Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello, North Bank Stocks and Jocks. I'm always just my Weber on the board. Jan Flanagan with us. S&P Futures up 350. Nasdaq Futures getting whacked here a little bit. They made a big comeback on Friday, but today not so much. We got all the gold and copper stuff up again. Boy, Jan, if you just would have, man, oh, man. We just would have bought some FCX and some corn and some soybeans and some oil and some gold. Actually, I do have a lot of gold and silver for my guys, so that part. But that has not been the out of all commodities. I'll be quick with the truth. That has not been the, even though we've made some pretty good money lately, it has not been anywhere near as profitable as the gold or the soybeans or the other stuff. I mean, in corn, it's. But everything is. How conspiratorial are you? I mean, this is what I wonder. I've threatened to ask Maddie earlier, and I'll ask him now. This. How the hell does ransomware get involved in the Colonial Pipeline that's been around for 50 years or 60 years? And so the thing, just what you don't need is in the midst of something like this, a problem with the world's biggest, well, certainly the U.S.'s biggest pipeline. Now they're saying, oh, the oil prices are going to come up even more and more. Every excuse driving stuff up. I mean, I don't, how the hell does somebody get to hack into that thing from the outside? What manner of moron has these, all these things where people can get into them from their internet at home? Why are we doing that?
Well, I have to believe it's a targeted terrorist attack, and some government or governments are behind it, and it's, you know, probably the wave of the future when it comes to doing maximum damage to a military opponent or an economic opponent. Is you do this kind of stuff, and you can pretty much mask the real operatives. You know, it's the stuff of, you know, Mission Impossible kind of intrigue. But ultimately, it makes it pretty anonymous, unless, you know, you're really pretty sure what happened. And in the meantime, the damage that can result from it is astronomical. And of course, it has a, you know, copycat effect too, where this simply encourages the same kinds of attacks on similar types of, you know, infrastructure, utilities, and it obviously isn't that hard to do, Tom, which is kind of even more frightening. You wouldn't think it would be easy at all to do, but apparently it's not only possible, but it's probably only the tip of the iceberg from what we can expect in the future.
Well, I went to
I'm discouraged about the whole thing, I'll tell you.
I toured a ethanol plant. I won't say which one, but it was northwest in Illinois. And it was pretty fascinating, John. Big, huge place, a million different, you know, stuff going on. You know, distilling this, it's basically a massive still, for lack of a better term. And if actually, if you added one more thing to the end to purify the product, it would be a crummy booze, basically. I mean, you could drink it at the end, but it would give you an enormous headache. But it would work as booze, but you wouldn't want to. Let's put it that way. It's not poisonous, but you would have one hell of a headache. There were two or three chairs, these big computer screens, and the guy's telling me the only way you can move anything in this place, there wasn't a knob, what do you want to call it, a knob for a pipe where, you know, this goes into this tank or that tank. There wasn't a knob that wasn't electrically operated from those two or three seats. Now, you could get all of them manually if you had to, but you wouldn't want to. You'd be scaling huge heights. The guy said to me, you can't operate a thing in this place except from those two chairs. He goes, you're not operating at home. You're not operating from your cell phone. You're operating from those two chairs. It's totally self-contained. Now, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a systems guy. But to me, that would make me sleep pretty easily if I was at home and ran the place. You had to worry about the two guys showing up in a snowstorm, but other than that, or two girls, the idea that everything has to be so that a guy can mess with it from his bedroom, or his study, do we really need that everywhere? I mean, the answer is probably yes, and I'm just a total Luddite, but, I mean, do we really need that from everywhere? I don't know. Why should you be able to open up a pipeline thing from your house and figure that nobody else is going to figure out a way to screw it up?
Right. I mean, and the delicacy and you know, the distances involved and the complexity and the amount of you know, lives at stake because of these kinds of utilities or enterprises that can be controlled so effortlessly from small, you know, localized origins, and also destroyed very easily too, it seems. So there's something really out of balance. I mean, there aren't enough safety checks in the world maybe to prevent this kind of stuff from happening, but certainly when you get into, you know, cyber terrorism and ransomware on a local scale that is so costly and so devastating, I'm sure if somebody's figured out how to do it on a more penetrating scale and wreak even more damage. So,
well, are we, as a government, because let's face it, we've got an awful lot of swinging bleeps on payroll in this country. Do they do anything? Are they totally outmanned? Are they the regulatory community? I mean, are they useless? I mean, you know, Maddie Weber will say that 85 to 90% of all the thieving in Chicago in terms of money is stolen online. And yet, I'm going to say, if 1% of the police force is devoted to that, I'd be stunned.
I'd agree.
But hey, to get back to the real estate piece, which you are expert at, obviously, Audrey and her gang, they do their stuff out in the suburbs. And, you know, I have to, no matter all the rotten things, I can't really say too many rotten things. But, Aud is very good at what she does. And lately, I mean, if she gets a listing, God, it's like gold. The last house she had 22 offers in 48 hours over the listing price. In a neighborhood in Chicago, a place, a bungalow, for God's sake. Although, guess what? They're no longer bungalows, they're raised ranches. I always thought it was a bungalow, but it's a raised ranch.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's a, whatever. Somewhere along the line, when I was in the Chicago Public Schools, I wasn't a janitor anymore, I was a custodian. I still did the same stuff, but was that a promotion or what was that? I have no idea, but, or it's no longer offside, it's encroachment, right?
I mean, right. That's a real estate term, an old, you know.
Yeah, it also is encroachment. But I'm having a problem here. I mean, I can sort of create nirvana economically to where people are becoming more productive, therefore the real wages can go up. People can actually get paid more because they're producing more. It's not a monetary phenomenon. It's a value phenomenon. And to where they can pay a little more and things are worth a little more and blah, 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 and your money supply increases because these guys have more income. And you're going to get, you know, maybe a little inflation, but it's justified. And you have, you know, maybe people are downtown and they want to have a family and they're going to move somewhere where there's more room. I mean, there's piggy move up everywhere. I mean, if you ever lived in a downtown high rise, I mean, I lived at 70 West Huron for a while, and the amount of people that coming in and out of the building wasn't that great, but the amount of movement of people was huge. You know, some guy'd pile in, he'd get the studio, he'd get the girlfriend, and she's like ixnay in a studio, you know, or her apartment. You need the one bedroom, and baby one comes by. Now you need the two bedroom, and baby two comes by, and you move, right? So you've moved three times in the building, even though you like the place, right?
Right.
But I get this feeling, and I can't, maybe you can help. I can't get this feeling out of my mind. There was a song about that once, that when they're piling into some place that Audrey's selling, which is very, very good for the Southwest Burbs or the Northwest Burbs or wherever you happen to be, because that's what's happening, or even some of the neighborhoods in the further reaches of the city. That's got to be a good thing, Jan. I can't justify to myself that it's a positive game. I don't know that the person piling in there didn't just flee out of Peoria, where everybody's fleeing from, or St. Louis, to live downtown, and a riot went by his place, and the father-in-law of the lady says, you're not living with my daughter where riots are coming by your front door. Get the hell out of there. I mean, and all of a sudden, now the places downtown are being fled, and they're moving somewhere else, and they're paying. I can't figure out whether we're gaining or whether we're just shifting. To whether for every house that goes up 20 grand in the burbs, there's some place in the city that now is being knocked down, or it's an empty apartment somewhere. I mean,
right, or just can't sell at any price. Yeah. There was an interesting article in this past week's Natick newspaper, you know, the community newspaper on the Northwest Side here, by Russ Stewart, and it's about Northwest Side of Chicago real estate patterns. And he talks to a couple brokers in this article and says that the hottest properties right now are like six flats or eight flats, because people see this as a way of providing housing for an extended family situation where people maybe don't have stable jobs or any jobs, and that they normally would be at the, you know, beck and call of landlords who have no interest in where they go or if they stay or not. And you can provide sort of like it's like a bunker mentality where you'll have a family compound of sorts filled with people that you know can set whatever rates you want for rent for these people, or no rates at all, or just have everybody, you know, kind of live together in some kind of extended communal or family relationship. And if you can afford to carry it and pay the utilities on it and the waste removal and everything else for it, that's fine. Except that what that does to a neighborhood, I think, is really transform very, very much the dynamics of what it means to be a resident of community ABC. It's kind of like a, I hate to say it, an armed camp, but it turns it into some kind of a situation where you've got people who are not team players on a block the way they used to be. They're working for another boss. They're working for another goal here. And it's not just about, you know, keeping yourself afloat, but it's about us against everybody else. I'm not explaining it very well, but I don't think it's a positive trend at all. So
I would say, John, that if I were to buy a 10 flat on, say, the Isle of Man, right, we're in walking distance to a couple of nice restaurants and a couple of saloons, and just moved over there, within 2 years I'd have nine other people from Stocks and Jocks renting a unit. we'd be a month in Tuscany every year, a month in spring training, and maybe a month in the mountains for skiing. And even though you and I probably aren't skiing much anymore, but we could do that easy.
Well, and I used to have conversations with friends years ago. We'd laugh planning the retirement community of our dreams and how tough it would be for people we didn't like to get into it. And
yeah.
Everybody that we liked would be, you know, just dying to get into it, and there'd be room for them. And it was kind of a, you know, utopian fantasy, or, you know, kind of a
well, you got to have a place where you can go from because you got to do a maybe 2 weeks in the fall league, you got to do a month for spring training, and you know you got to do the Italy for maybe 6 weeks. I mean, it's, you got to get yourself around type of thing. You know, nobody wants to sit in one spot. You know, for especially the Isle of Man, the weather there is going to be lousy. But as long as there's a bar, you can hang out most of the time. Hey, I did something Friday night. I'm going to say, John, it's maybe not, but I'm going to bet it's the last time I ever do something like this. I went to a wake of a World War II vet.
Really?
And I'm going to say he had to be pushing 98, 99. And he was a engineer in Europe before D-Day. Well, he wasn't on the continent before D-Day, but he was over there. He might have been Italy or someplace, but he was an engineer. He was in the Army, but he was Army Engineer Corps or whatever it was. And talk about bizarre name. Well, everybody in the family was a Stu, right? Because the name was Tuzuski. Now, this doesn't sound horrible to people, but when you were the guy who always put together the basketball game or the softball game or whatever, and you called people, in those days, there were no cell phones or anything, so you essentially called the house and the phone in the kitchen, and you always got everybody's mother, right? So I couldn't just say, hello, Mrs. Stu. I had to say Mrs. Stuzuski. Say that about 1,000 times. And you knew all the mothers. And I felt awful last year when she died. I couldn't go to the wake. I mentioned that on the air because of the COVID stuff. And they wouldn't even let you go to the funeral. I mean, why I can't go stand 40 yards away at the cemetery, I never could quite figure that out. But evidently, they didn't want you at the funeral either. I could see if you're not going to the church, but how do you not go to the cemetery? Talk about socially distancing. You could be across the road, for God's sake. But anyway, we're talking about a different time where you knew everybody's mother because they were the focal point, especially when you got like 8 kids of where everybody went. It got to the point where I'd call looking for Don, who was my age, and I'd say, is Don around, Mr. Zuski? Ah, Tom, what bar are you going to tonight? I'll just tell him. Where are you? You go to Parkwood or OB Joe's? I go, we're going to Parkwood. You didn't put anything by those old ladies. I mean, it wasn't like they were dummies. They were not. They knew right where 8 people were going every night. And, it was talking about a different.
They were running businesses and they didn't know it.
Oh, yeah. But we had a bowling team and it was Eddie, Dan, Tommy, and Johnny, all Stews, and then there was me. So it was a. So we bowled at the Arena Lanes and had a nice time, and everybody was just good people. And boy, 99 though. I'm thinking my stepfather was 17, and he was one of the last people that I don't know if he was drafted or enlisted, and he was a trained to be a navigator on a B-24, I think, and he was supposed to ship off to the Far East. And then the next day, the bomb got dropped, so he never went. So I'm saying he was, if you were 17 in 1945, he had to be one of the youngest people. And he'd be, that was what? That was 55. He'd be like 93. So if you were there at the beginning, like if you were in the Arizona or anything like that, or Pearl Harbor, you gotta be pushing 97, 98.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so there can't be too many of those dudes left. Didn't the last guy, from the Arizona just die?
Yeah, there was a thing I saw in the news about it. The reunions had been dwindling, of course, pretty dramatically for the last 5-10 years.
Did he get buried there?
I think so. Because it was a very moving story.
He and the two spots you could still get buried were the Arizona, was it the Oklahoma too, right? Or is it the Utah? One of the two. Well, there's still bodies there. The one that overturned. You could still have your not the body they wouldn't put in, but if you were cremated, they'd put the urn in there. If the divers go down, because they just had a one of those things like 4 or 5 months ago I saw on TV, and I think there were 4 people eligible left, and like you say, it must be the last guy, must be gone. But to go to one of those things, that would have to be moving, huh?
God, yeah, jeez. I've been to some Korean War veteran funerals and wakes, but that's sort of the norm now, and they're becoming rarer too.
Yeah.
That was a big deal when I was a kid. I mean, I went to grade school with kids whose fathers had been killed in Korea, and it was a very sad thing. It brought the war very close to home, and then forget about Vietnam, which was too close for comfort. But even that's passing now away into memory. So
I was talking to somebody last week, one of the listeners, and we were kind of emailing back and forth, and I said there's still the oddest place. I mean, I'm not one of these people around me that are into the, you know, there's ghosts wandering around kind of people. But, you know, who knows? They could be right because I have no idea. But I never was kind of one of those. But I'll tell you what, John, I've never felt the same eerie as at that Vietnam War Memorial. I went through the World War II. World War II is, I don't know who designed that one. He should be shot from the
architecture. Oh, it's horrendous. It's really horrendous.
Korea's pretty good, but the Vietnam thing...
It's spot on. That hits you.
If you don't have the hair on the back of your neck, stand straight up, something's wrong with you. I mean, it's there's a presence there of some kind. I mean, I don't know what it is. I mean, I just talk off the top of my head here as usual, but I just, I mean, you still have people, you know, bawling at their dad's name and stuff. I mean, it's really, so I don't think, our generation's never going to recover from that. I mean, no. We haven't yet. I mean, did you have I knew a couple of guys from high school that didn't come back. I mean, you met our buddy Robert from the Fed.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I mean, Robert was I'll tell the story real quick, and then we'll get back into the real estate part, because see if it affects some of the market here. Robert was what do you call him, an Army brat? I mean, he grew up in various places. I think he was, what's the one in Carolina? Is it Camp Lejeune? I don't know. I don't think he was, no, Camp Lejeune's Marines, right?
Right.
Well, whatever he was. He was a, and I was talking about it, and I said, you know, one night after a few adult beverages, I said, you know, if there is a heaven, and I'm targeted from there, I don't know if I am or not, I might pause and say, give me a couple hours in the other place, because I want to go dot Lyndon Johnson's eye for sending people where he knew the war was not winnable. I can't even begin to think how much I can't stand the guy for that, because our friend Kathy Durbin got me some, and I cannot find this, John. It must have got scrubbed. Somebody dug up one of the tapes from the Johnson era, and he was talking to some good old boy redneck dude down in the South, and you know, the guy's like, Lyndon's going, we can't win this war. We can't win this war. Yeah, Lyndon, nobody likes a loser. Nobody likes a loser. If you pull out, you ain't getting elected again. You can't be a loser. So the next day, Johnson sends like 50,000 people there. And a lot of them didn't come back, right? So I'm giving a story to Robert, and he goes, well, let me go with you. And I look at him, you're serious. He goes, oh, yeah. A lot of those 50,000 people came from the camp I was at, and a lot of them didn't come back, and they were my friends. I mean, he was way more serious into it than I was. And he goes, yeah, I knew a lot of those people. They came from out of our what are these called, forts or whatever. And they didn't come back. I mean, that guy knew the thing was not winnable. I mean, for God's sake. I mean, anyway, winnable.
One thing, too, I mean, about being haunted by something. I visited Gettysburg, you know, the battlefield with my family. It was 100 years after the war. It was like the spring of 64. And it's the only place I've ever been to that I felt was certifiably haunted.
Yeah.
I can't even explain why. Because it was a beautiful day. You know, it was an early spring
there's
day.
There's a pall over. There's like a thickness.
Oh, man.
To it.
I mean, we were all kind of shaken up by it. We all couldn't explain what we felt. It wasn't like I was seeing visions or apparitions or anything really paranormal. But you felt that you were being watched or something, and it was the spookiest experience I think I've ever had. It made me kind of, you know, really read about that event and kind of get closer to it. And the Vietnam Memorial is, I think, the only one that comes close.
Well, one of these days, if I
bring that up,
if I, you know, God willing, I'm gonna get over to Europe, and I want to do D-Day, but I also want to make a stop in Flanders Fields, and I'm gonna say that I will bet you that Flanders Fields are a lot more haunting than D-Day.
Oh, yeah, Tom.
Just the long-term, the death and the trenches and one after another. And ugh.
And the agonizing death, a lot of those.
Yeah.
You know, and the death even after the war ended.
Just brutal. Right. Anyway, all right, John, can you name, I mean, if you were going to if you look at what's going on in the real estate stuff, look at the what's happening in these companies are winners, these companies are losers, and you've seen obviously the targets of the world because Walmart, you know, the mayors were pissed off at Walmart. I mean, Target's ascension in Chicago has been, it's been like nothing I've ever seen.
Right. We got a new one up here, not far from me.
Yeah. They've just taken over the place, and we're still only got, what, two or three Walmarts in the whole city? And they're the edges. Are there any small Walmarts? There's a lot of small Targets.
Right. That's kind of, you know, the one that's been put up here. And the one down near Wrigley Field at Belmont and Clark there.
Yeah.
These are not like the Targets that were first opened in the city by any stretch. They're not what you would call a big box store at all. But they have groceries, they have, you know, cosmetics, they have booze, they have you name it. They're trying to be. Maybe it's the last gasp of the walk-in store, the brick and mortar store, as you know, it was conceived and thrived for so long. I don't see that kind of. You'll think going into the future, though, I think Target is barking up the wrong tree. I think this is a long-term,
you know what, Jen, I honestly think that that's all part of the press that you and I were talking about earlier. It's all BS. There's a Walgreens by me. They tore down this God. This poor pastor dies. It couldn't have been a month before his kids sold the place, and there had to be a three-story Walgreens there, seemingly in 6 weeks. I don't know how they'll manage to pull that off, but you walk in there. If the place is loaded with people who live by themselves, walking in, grabbing the milk, grabbing the six pack of beer. I mean, they're not going to go home and order that. I mean, they're walking right by the place. If you're convenient, that I think those places will be around. It's like a much better 7-Eleven. I mean they got the prescriptions downstairs, but still, I mean, it is a drugstore, but I'm going to say. Other than the prescriptions people have to have, 80% of the stuff is walk in, grab your six pack, grab your thing of milk, grab your thing of cream, and walk down the block to your house on the way from the L. I mean, I don't see.
Well, and it will become, you know, the go to place for a lot of people who can't, you know, they don't have the security to get stuff delivered to their house, or they're but to shop that way, Tom, is not a very economically wise move because. The stores around here, the Walgreens I know of, are getting robbed blind all the time. And to help the people I know in these stores laugh about it, there's nothing they can do about it. And the prices are all over the ballpark
really?
For kind of staple stuff. So I tend not to shop anymore at Walgreens, not because I have any philosophical objections, but there's nothing that I really want to buy there or that I can't get better or at a better price somewhere else. So, but there will always be people who need that kind of store. You're right. I grant you that.
What two things would you get a chance to? But maybe who knows? Maybe we'll see it later in the week. But two of the biggest rental companies
they're buying back people's cars now.
Well, no, they're the apartment places. All of them raised their prices 11% last week. I don't know if we saw that or not. There's two companies that you probably heard the names of, but huge place that have that do management for people up 11%. It's a lot in 1 year. I mean, it's a serious amount, and. You know, we're starting to see these prices marching up here like there's no tomorrow. And, I mean, and we're in serious denial. I don't see 11% raises around the board.
No, imagine how that's going to get passed down in so many other directions, too. And it's going to, you know, be more than 11% before you get through.
Are there any companies that you can think of off the top of your head in 30 seconds that would benefit from this that we should be in?
Well, it would be short-term benefit, I think. I just can't see that being... I mean, the bigger ones, of course, will survive. The bigger management companies that have huge inventories, and if, at a certain point, they can charge whatever they want, and there'll be tenants who will pay whatever they charge. So, some of those will do okay, but the smaller, the mid-sized ones, I just don't see that they can compete. I think the owners of these places, let alone the management companies, are really threatened by what's happening now because that there's not enough predictability of where we're going to be in a year. For them to plan, and I would hate to be sitting at a huge stack of apartments that are probably vacant now, or that you're trying because you can't get any rent.
Sure, if you're in the right spot, though, you're golden, John. Thank you very much. Maybe we'll talk to you later in the week. SP Futures up 5. NASDAQ Futures down 43. Be right back, Mr. Mike Hart. Talk about volatility.
We're actually going to have Jeff Joseph in for Mike.
Really?
That's right.
Well, that's a rare treat.
They're swapping this week, so we'll have Jeff next.
Well, that's great. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Lower North Bay Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allies, Mr. Weber on the board. S&P Futures up 550. We had the NASDAQ Futures down 39. Dow Futures up 124. So again, we've got this sort of mixed bag where the NASDAQ is, even though we came back strong 2 days last week, it's still been a laggard in the market versus the Dow and versus the S&P. Definitely because of, definitely the Dow. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 5. Call that flat. FTSE up 3. Call that flat. Back around down 6. I think we're having a snoring day over in trading over in Europe. Asia, Nikkei up 160.5%. Shanghai up 9.2%. Hang Seng down 14. Call that flat. As a way of review, on Friday, Dow was up 229. S&P up 30. And then NASDAQ did participate on Friday, up 119. That's almost a full 1% after having a lackluster earlier in the week. Bonds, 1.57 on the 10-year. The Bund, minus 0.21. Japan positive 0.09, UK positive 0.80. Oil, which has been rallying up 55 cents, 65.45. Gas is up, in case you haven't noticed. Brent up 63 cents, 68.91. Natural gas down 2 cents, 2.93. Matty, yesterday I didn't fill up the tank. It was a combination of the price being high, the wind and the rain. I don't know which was made me stop. A
nasty Mother's Day weather-wise.
Oh,
good Lord.
RBOB up 2 cents, 2.15. Gold is up 9.79, 18.41. Silver up 35 cents, 27.83. Copper up 9 cents, 4.83. Actually piled on the gold and silver last week and made a few extra bucks up finally by piling on. Although I'd not piled on this morning and I wish I was. Crypto, Bitcoin up 8.57, 58.216. You know, Maddie, when it goes your way, you're never long enough or you're never short enough, they say. Just saying.
That's right.
What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Traffic starting to build steadily on the Edens and Kennedy, but no accidents to report. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. That outbound crash at Route 53 down near Bolingbrook in that area on the Stevenson is all clear, so that's good news. But traffic building steadily on the inbound side, and a lot of red around Cicero on the inbound Stevenson. Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford have been quiet all morning, so that's good. Off the expressways, looks like pretty quiet as well. No major issues to report. Just one crash that's been going on down in Joliet. Apparently a car was traveling at high speed, hit a traffic light, and broke in half. And that has Jefferson Street in Joliet between Manor Court and Hunter Avenue closed for that accident investigation. And that's been closed all morning. Weather today, another just kind of dreadful late spring day here in on May 10th. We're approaching mid-May, and the weather still feels like early March. Clouds, rain, cold temperatures, a high of just 48 with real feels in the low 40s. Right now, it is mostly cloudy and 45 degrees downtown. Still dry, but rain coming later on. For our Phoenix listeners, no rain down there. Sunshine with a high of 96. Right now, it's clear and 68. In sports, White Sox swept the Royals down in KC, winning yesterday 9-3. Sox are in first place in the AL Central. Cubs finally got back above 500 yesterday and then fell to the Pirates 6-5, so they're back at 17-17, but they did take 2 of 3 from the Pirates. Diamondbacks lost to the Mets 4-2. They're struggling. They've lost 6 in a row. NBA basketball, Bulls beat the Pistons 108-96. Still hanging on to their slim playoff chances are the Bulls. Suns lost to the Lakers 123-110. Blackhawks played in front of fans for the first time all season at the United Center last night, and they doubled up the Stars 4-2, but the Hawks have been eliminated from playoff contention. Chief.
Is it any truth to the rumor that Mr. Jeff Joseph is long 3 million bushels of corn from last August at 320, and he still won't let them go at 729? He hasn't sold one friggin' bushel.
No, I'm not the guy hoarding it. Nope.
You think you could let a couple of them go up here? You're up $4, for God's sake.
Yeah, same. How about it?
What do you think?
My lumber, and I'll build my future.
And your guy, your man Evans, is on here. I'm obviously talking to you, so I'm not listening. Probably telling us there is no inflation, and we're paying these guys. Why? Just Evans is the Chicago Fed president.
Right. Yep. I have no idea what he's looking at. I mean, that's going to be a hard story to continue to sell. Inflation has, just tracking overall stories and trends, that word has trended significantly higher. We're actually researching the opportunity to do a deep dive for an upcoming Luckbox issue and talk about inflation, but we feel that we might have even missed it at this point. The word is trending so much, and it's finally reemerged back into the vernacular again. So I think some of your rants over the last year are starting to pay off. Maybe that's what instilled the commodity price rally. Maybe you're the cause of inflation.
That's just what I was thinking.
But references to inflation are obviously picking up, as reflected in the prices. I don't know how the Fed's going to be able to continue to sell that nonsense.
Well, how we'd like to take diseases and we put them away and hopefully they never come back, like smallpox. We also do that with words. Are we going to have to drag out, is there going to be a headline? You don't have to pay me for this. Is there going to be a Luckbox magazine that says stagflation, have we pulled it out of the vault? The word. We have to pull that one out. I thought we buried that one forever.
Well, I think we're trying to find out if the word, first of all, can be used nowadays or if it's violating some gender norm. So we're tossing around stagflation. That's definitely out. I don't think you can use the word stagflation. Reinflation sounds gender neutral. Inflation, I think, has a bias against outflation. So we're still playing with it. We'll figure it out.
What about the guy the other day?
I like reinflation is gender neutral.
What about the guy the other day that has a flattation? What is that supposed to mean? I couldn't even find it. That's his new word, is flattation. So what does that mean?
I think that's a new one.
Even make sense.
No, it doesn't. I kept digging around for a while. Yeah. I couldn't find it. But how does stagnant and inflation, meaning stagflation, become a gender problem?
Well, stag.
Ah.
It's a problem. Let's move on.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, we'll have to drop that one.
Maybe we got to put the N-A-N-T back in, stagnant inflation or something, the whole word in. Something.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of time for younger people to focus on these concerns. I saw the Illinois numbers that just came in. According to the last census, 36% of Illinois' population between 18 and 34 now live with their parents. That number's up from 31%, a decade ago. So,
well, the difference is the ad part being, I guess I can be ethnic since I am a product of two. the Irish group always had like the bungalow, and they'd have like seven or eight kids, and the old man couldn't wait until the last kid was out the door. Right? that was the Irish group. Now the Italian side, they didn't care if you ever left. I mean, if you were living there when you were 40, they were happy. They wanted everybody around. So it, I mean, some families, let's put it this way, 50 years ago, if you still had two or three kids living there when they were 30 because they were working overtime and on weekends, it was not unusual. I'm not so sure now the parents want them there or they want to be there.
Well, I think you might explain something. Well, like I said, the number in Illinois is 36%, which is up from 31.5% over a decade ago. But 36% of 18 to 34-year-olds living at home with their parents is not by any means a record. It's only 12th in the nation. Number one slot goes to New Jersey. So maybe the high degree of Italian-American residents in New Jersey accounts for that data.
That would make sense, actually.
Well, I didn't,
yeah, maybe.
I didn't shove out till I was over 30, but it was totally different like to today. I paid rent, and I rented my room, but I worked on a trading floor, and I painted houses or played ball all weekend. There was really no reason for me. I basically slept there.
Probably your own health care, too.
Yeah, I mean, oh, yeah. And, well, I mean, when you get a load of this, when you became a market maker, Jeff, how about the world has changed? Your hospitalization was included, even if you only made, like, two trades a day, right?
Yeah,
so first option.
That?
And if I had my first clerk, I think it was $75 a month for the guy's whole family. You know, so that ship has sailed. So I had three clerks working for me, and the entire hospitalization was $225, and two of them had families. So yeah, and you know, I mean, and it was I'm sure the policy was better than anything you have today in terms of what it covered. But yeah, it was a
well.
Go ahead.
I was curious, Chief, just because I wasn't able to tune in when the jobs report came out on Friday. What was your take on that? Obviously, the non-farm payroll number was much, much lower than expected, you know, at, what, 266 relative to the 1 million anticipated. But how'd you read that?
First of all, I read it like you. But Carl, our expert, said that if you actually looked at the unadjusted household survey, the number was up six something. That somehow there's a big adjustment that came in there. That the actual number was
the
up.
The adjusted numbers actually came in lower, actually reduced non-farm from the prior reports. You know,
you're talking about the month before. You're talking about the month before.
Right, exactly.
No, he's talking about the adjustment that's made every month. That's one of the months where they try and figure out people that are working for other people, and they make these huge adjustments a couple times a year. Is that if you actually looked at just the unadjusted household numbers, the numbers were up 600 and some thousand, not 200 and some thousand. Because I always look at, and you probably do the same thing, I look at that A1 thing that comes out.
Sure.
That's the adjusted A1. Is if you dig back into the unadjusted, the number was a lot bigger. So that's.
Well, I still think it's hard to quantify this notion that the pandemic benefits are you know, creating a disincentive. Anecdotally, I do hear it all the time, as you know, and we've talked in the past. I'm frequently speaking with people in the restaurant industry. I was talking to one over the weekend who has offered $1,500 signing bonuses to any kitchen staff that's a new hire that stays over a 30-day period of time and has had no takers. And this is it's a premium restaurant property as well. So there's a lot to be said for this notion that there is some sort of economic disincentive. There are many restaurants having tremendous difficulty hiring right now, and I think that's going to be a problem that needs to be addressed. As to what the linkage is, it's hard to say, you know, directly how much of this is associated to those benefits. But I did see the number that the National Federation of Small or Independent Businesses, I forget what it's called, set a record of 44% of small business owners had job openings in April. So I think, you know, I think we have an issue there. There's
yes.
clearly a problem. That's a record, 44% of small businesses. So until that is somehow addressed, I think we're going to continue to have a labor and unemployment
Jeff,
problem.
what do you think of when you make of this? And obviously, because one of the themes of the show today, starting out with the Maris story, is when you read things in the paper you only get to hear one side of it, you know.
No question.
And so you...
There's no question of that. And of course, data and statistics, you know, do a great job of lying, particularly by the people cherry-picking those. That's, you know, kind of an obsession of our publication, of Luckbox. You know, we're very data-centric, and we realize that every time we write any story that we have the opportunity to cherry-pick the data that's going to put our storyline or narrative in the most compelling light. And that is not only an issue, but, you know, that's why we try to show numbers on both sides. It's not easy to do. For example, what you just referred to on the Friday employment report, my knee-jerk would be, yeah, I'm not sure I'm buying that. You know, we've been reporting by one standard always. We look at non-farm payrolls. We're looking at A1. And then they have someone say, yeah, but that doesn't tell the true story this last month, this last report, because it doesn't show the adjustment. Well, then that negates any kind of trend analysis you can do on any prior jobs report, because, you know, there's always someone that says, well, you got to look at this number. I don't necessarily buy that. I think, you know, if you're, you know, for the sake of consistency, you have to look at one number. It's the only way you can truly develop trends and ascertain a trend.
Well, I agree.
Look at the underlying clauses, but
the issue is that, you know, you and I always look at the adjusted number, or Carl always looks at the unadjusted number because he doesn't trust the adjusted number, which is one we're looking at.
Right.
I have a question for you, though. When it comes to these people, you know, not coming back to work, I look at, you know, going backward to having my last beer in the Tripoli Tap on the 16th of March last year before we shut everything down. And
sorry to hear that.
Well, I mean, I've been there since, but I'm saying it was been a long time. But the idea that somebody is going to be working at a restaurant, let's say 10, 11 bucks an hour back then, and, you know, I'm going to say reasonably happy, or who knows. The idea that a year, well, we're 14 months later, that you call the guy up or a lady up and say, your job's ready, by the way, we'll pay like $11.50, not realizing what has changed in that 14 months. I mean, come on, are you serious? I mean, is the person still here if he didn't have anything to
work? But that's not what's happening. And that's a great question, but there's a better answer there. That's not actually what's happening across the board. Restaurant owners are offering more wages, particularly the large multi-unit regional and national chains. They have quietly upped their offering of base pay and their minimum wage materially. So that's not what's happening. People are not coming back with the same wages pre-pandemic. They're offering more and more incentives, higher base pays, and they're just not getting takers.
I mean, I understand, but it's also kind of what direction. They had a reason why I'm saying, I mean, I like to joust with you, Jeff, because you have so much knowledge, and I try and get it out of you. And I always get it out of you best when I argue with you, which is fine. They had a guy from New York saying, the amount of people that are gone, you couldn't stay in New York for a year without a job. They're gone. He goes, he was a restaurant guy. He goes, I called my 20 people back to work. There's only three of them even live here anymore. I mean,
but they went somewhere.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, in the meantime, in Chicago, if you stayed in your rental building, and I don't know if rents have gone up, but lately they have. I mean, the tolls to get from Indiana have gone up 40%. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, is it the point where, how can I say it? I'll say this differently. When you have your congressman, let's forget about the 600-hour piece. Let's talk about the 300 piece. When your congressman, the people, well, let's say they're supposed to know something. Let's say whether they do or they don't. When they start telling you that a living wage, a wage that somebody has to make to stay where they are and not leave and not, you know, be underneath a bridge, is essentially two and a half times more than people are making. There's a message there somewhere, Jeff. I mean, there's a serious message there, right? And it's not just the 600 so I can sit on a sofa and get my six-pack every day. I mean, I honestly don't think that's I'm sure somebody somewhere that's happening, but I don't think that that's – I mean, I just think the whole idea of the 10, 11 bucks, but some people still think that they're, I think that's gone the way of the dodo bird, for God's sake. I don't see that happen. I don't see how anybody can do that.
Well, agreed, and I think the markets recognize that too, and that's why the problem is not that people are still offering the same pre-pandemic wages, but they're offering more and they're not getting takers. So, you know, I guess the simple answer is that the market's going to find its equilibrium as the wages are being raised. But they have been. You know, McDonald's and Burger King both quietly raised wages on entry level positions. And as I said, the national chains are doing it. It's harder for the smaller businesses because, you know, obviously they have real margin issues and they don't have the benefit of being publicly traded where valuations clearly don't matter. But the market's going to have to find equilibrium. It's going to take a long time to do that. I think one of the bigger, you know, on this actual question, what I'm most fascinated about is having some transparency into the surveys that employers have been taking in the last month alone, asking their employees their attitude about returning back to the office. So as a result of some work that we're doing, we've had transparency into a couple dozen of large corporations surveying their employees as to what their attitudes are, because it's a tough one. You know, the companies would like to bring people back into the office, but there's a lot of aversion to that. And I've seen these actual surveys, and even down to the individual comments by employees. And I think what companies are going to have to deal with now, and which is going to be really affecting the landscape of employment over the couple years to come, is that either for genuine fear of the pandemic or an opportunistic response to the pandemic and the mandated working from home over the last year, we are seeing a much higher aversion of employees to return to work. When they're surveyed anonymously, they're saying, I'm far more productive, I don't have commute time, I don't have time associated with personal hygiene, I don't have the expenses associated with having to, you know, eat out during work or go buy food. I am far more productive at home.
In whose
and
mind?
We're seeing this invariably.
In whose mind?
I'm sorry?
In whose mind?
In the employee's mind.
Okay, well,
saying that they're far more productive at home, which may or may not be the case.
Right.
Quite frankly, I think that one's a toss-up as to whether or not they are. I think my theory that I think it's going to take a couple years to pan out because it's going to take a lot of data to look at, is that the employee's perception is that they are far more productive at home. Either they're deceiving themselves or, in fact, they truly are. But the pandemic gives them that response to try to, you know, lock themselves in working at home. And companies are going to look at this and say, yeah, all right, well, we might be gaining individual productivity, but we are losing on our team culture and we're losing out on team efficiency and productivity because of the absence of, you know, collaboration that occurs at a direct personal level. But we're willing to accept those losses because we can reduce our footprints and save money on our rent materially. We can convert some of these employees over to contractors now that we're not mandating their on-premise work, and that's a distinct savings of, you know, 22 to 25% on payroll and FICA and withholding and benefits. And those companies that pay for meals don't have to do that for employees anymore. So I think companies are going to be forced with this choice of saying, okay, maybe we're losing some things here, but we're gaining on our balance sheet, and we're going to let this go. So you are going to have a major shift. Obviously, we all knew this. This is nothing new, that there was going to be more people working from home post-pandemic as a result of it. But I think those numbers are going to be much higher than even initially anticipated. There is a very distinct and discernible reluctance and aversion of employees to return to the office in the June-September period. And that's the polling, the surveying that we've seen, where companies are saying, okay, from June to September, do you want to come back? And everyone's making the case as to why they shouldn't.
Except,
so it's going to be really interesting to see how, you know, what this does to company productivity. The current consensus is that people are more productive working from home. I personally doubt those numbers because there's, you know, less accountability, first and foremost. And we really don't know. I think this is more of a opportunistic stab that many people are saying is to improve their lifestyle, which is, hey, it's a good thing. If you can have a choice of working from home versus working from an office, I get it. You are going to save money on your commute. You are going to have more potential working hours because you're not commuting and not, you know, engaging in the daily hygiene theatrics that go into walking into an office and being seen by other people, you know. We'll see what it actually does with respect to productivity. I think it's a great question, and we've got a lot to learn.
Okay, Jeff, I'm going to sound like a total old curmudgeon on this, and I don't know why, but maybe because I worked in factories and stuff, but I'm going to say it's not their call. I mean, it's if Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, Google just came out in the last 2 weeks and says you're back in work by June or like, see ya. You know, I'm not... You know, I'm sort of not.
No, that's the problem, though. The companies are having legal issues with this because they don't want to mandate employees back because of the potential liability and risk.
Okay, but what I'm saying is,
employees speaking to a reluctance, so you got a potential, you know, ill will there that could be generated by mandating a return.
Well, I mean,
look how the teachers dug their feet in.
Teachers.
That was the purest example of opportunism. You know, all the data suggested they should come back. The CDC said they should come back. But they just dug their feet in.
We're
not coming back, even at the expense of our children.
Jeff, if you and I were co-mayors...
This is a tough one for companies. What they don't want to do, there are people, you know, one of the questions that we're seeing the most is, do you feel comfortable wearing a mask? About, if I were to generalize, 50% of the people said they would, 30% said they would not return to work if they must wear masks. And these are private surveys, you know, dozens of them going out. So if you mandate a mask, I'm not coming back. Whereas 50%, that's 30%, whereas about 50% said I'd be willing to wear a mask
if we'll have to continue.
The other thing
one.
Is companies don't want to make the move to say you must show a vaccination card because they don't want to, you know, cross into that personal rights issue. So it's a really tricky issue for companies right now. I think they're going to punt, you know, and punt this to the fourth quarter because the June September polling that we're seeing really indicates that companies can't make a decision.
Well,
it's
if you we got to dash here, but I'm going to say that at some point, I think it's Goldman Sachs is saying you may think you've been productive at home, but we're seeing the numbers down. If you're not here, you're never getting promoted. If I don't see, I don't know who the hell you are. It's unfortunate. But by the way, if you and I
you're saying at some point that will come, right? That companies will be.
I think that if you and I were co-mayors, the teachers would be back or they'd be fired. They wouldn't not fired. They wouldn't be getting paid.
That's absolutely true.
Okay, you and I, we argue all the time. But we see a lot of we think alike on a lot of stuff, Jeff.
Here we go.
Talk to you soon, buddy. Take care of yourself. SP Futures up 4. Be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
Hey guys, what's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.